If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to On The Box. It's On The Box. It's the television podcast on Anfield Index, and I'm your new host, Gags Tandon, taking over the reins from Stu, who's going to be focusing totally on the comic pod, which is fine. Yeah, that's totally fine. But that means free reign. That's dangerous territory. Dangerous territory on a podcast with just me on it. I'm going to fuck things up. So how do we do that? We start it off by kicking off with one of the biggest shows in 2016. This is a Christmas special for the listeners because we should have covered this off ages ago. But we've been so busy doing stuff on Anfield Index, Audible, everything else that goes on, that this show has been put on the back burner. But now it's here. Stranger Things is what we're going to talk about. An absolute blockbuster took social media by storm. People were talking about it for months and months. They still are. Some people that are still, you know, new to it. And we're hoping that we get you to watch it. But the problem is, the first 10 minutes or so, we're going to talk about, you know, what it reminds us of. And then after that, it's spoiler central. So if you want to fuck off after that, if you want to watch it, you best go away. I'm just going to be, and also, this isn't going to be a family-friendly show. We can swear, we can do what the hell we want. On The Box, it's television. You got to take it like that. Anyway, who are my guests? I have the host of the AI podcast, the co-host, and very softly spoken, gently spoken, a gentleman himself, the king of intros, although I hope I did well on this one, Kate. Judge me, Blue, judge me. How you doing, Kate?
I'm all good. I'm all good, man. I actually got a couple of complaints after my last face-off that it was a bit too rough. Like, so soft-spoken might be something that falls away soon.
Well, you know what? On the face-offs, you got to kind of embody the game. You know, if it won, boom it. If it lost, mellow it.
Yeah.
You know voice control. Come on. We've been doing this too long now. And also joining us, a massive part of the AI comic party writes like mad. There's an article waiting, I think, to get over out over Christmas that I'll do. And also part of the USA pod, it's Mr. Joey Connors. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing good, Gags. It's a very early morning for me, but this is my time of day. I love the best.
Yes, it is. The kids are asleep.
Yes, they are for now.
For now. Right. So basically, we're going to cover a TV show that we all really, really loved. Stranger Things took us by imagination. I think we're all 80s children, I think. Most of our 80s. Yes, is that right? We all grew up in the 80s?
Yeah, I was born in 81, so yeah,
I was
basically.
So I don't even remember the 70s. My first year, I don't remember much of that. So yeah, we basically are all 80s, born in the, or at least lived our childhood in the 80s. So the first thing that comes to mind with Stranger Things is how much did it remind you, or actually, let's talk shows first before we go into the childhood aspect. But what did it remind you of? Because this had lots of, you know, throwbacks or homages. You know, the guys that made this, they loved other shows, didn't they? So let's go to Joey first. Joey, what did it remind you of? What kind of shows did it remind you of? Or even movies?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. It was the movies. For me, this was basically a huge homage to Stephen King. So Stand By Me was the first thing I thought of. Four boys, that's the same exact plot. They actually, if you guys remember in Stranger Things, they have a scene where the boys are walking by the railroad tracks, which is a huge scene in Stand By Me. That's a perfect homage to that movie. A little bit of E.T. It's just, same exact thing. There's, again, to go back to Stephen King, he basically used Stephen King in just every episode. There was an homage to some kind of Stephen King. There was an homage to Charlie McGee with Elle and her powers. They brought up it when Winona Ryder's talking about, remember when she got tickets, Poltergeist tickets for Will. Mm-hmm. And she said, just don't get scared of that. And he replies back, I don't get scared of things like that. And then her response is, oh yeah, not even of clowns. Obviously perfect homage to it. So when I first started watching it, when I seen previews for people talking about it, because it was huge on social media, on Twitter, I was like, wow, this is a reminder of my childhood. This is the 80s stuff that I like. I'm a huge horror fan. And that's what I was like, oh, this is really cool. So yeah, that's the first thing that popped into my head when I first started watching it was the Stand By Me, the Stephen King, the E.T., things like that.
I thought differently, but I'll go after you, Kay. What did you agree with? I mean, obviously he's totally right, Joey. It is. They've admitted that the Duffers, it's the Matt and Ross, is it? Matt and Ross Duffer admitted that they've massive influence from Stephen King. Was there anything else on your point? Because you might cover the same as me here, Kay.
Yeah, no, maybe a bit different. Well, TV was very different in the 80s in South Africa relative to you guys. We didn't get so much. So actually, one of the weird things, right? The weird things from this, from Stranger Things. Firstly, Stranger Things is my shit, right? Because if you caught me on the comic pod or speaking about movies, I don't like trailers. I just want somebody to tell me that might be something you want to look at, and then I'll go and look at it. So I watched it basically because Gags, you and a couple other people on Twitter were like, you have to watch this. This is the thing. But I didn't know it was set in the 80s. I didn't know it was a sci-fi. I didn't know any of the stuff that was going to happen. I just sort of started watching it and saw where the thing happened. So, I mean, this was absolutely perfect. This was the pinnacle of me trying to watch stuff. But weirdly enough, one of the things that I thought overlapped quite nicely was the Wonder Years. Just because, the kids take such a central part of it.
And I did not think that at all.
The whole, just I know you. It's so stupid, right?
I get
shit on Twitter. But not the sci-fi bit, but just the way the kids are the central part of everything, and you live the show through the view of the kids, and all the adults are like peripheral, right? They're all like peripheral, so that was great. And what they did really well in the Wonder Years was the scenes at night with what's his face and whoever played Winnie Cooper. But those became really emotional. It was like you're swimming in an emotion soup when it came to the nighttime scenes and the two of them. And there was, a sort of wonderful, innocent tension that happened there. And I thought they captured that really well in this. But for me, it was definitely movies. So, I definitely found E.T., but also it was, the Goonies. The Goonies was a big one for me. I felt like I was living some of the Goonies while I was watching this. And then Flight of the Navigator, which our friend Gags Lloyd brought up the other day. But both of those, and in the 80s, you find that, right? In the 80s, you find these films where kids go off and do stuff by themselves and get caught up in these massive adventures. And it stopped. It stopped in, during the 90s and obviously into the whatever you call the 2000s. But those kinds of stuff, really, it's a lot. And the 80s connection was like solidly in there. They went there so explicitly. Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, just finishing off on what you said, E.T. massively. I think even 11 was asked to act a little bit like that.
There was
areas of her character where they wanted her to behave a little bit extraterrestrial, not human, which she did so amazingly. We'll talk about performances and characters and actors and actresses later on. But from my point of view, all of that stuff that you've talked about, Joey talked about in terms of Stephen King, Goonies for sure. The Wonder Years, a fantastic shout. I didn't think of it that way. We all think of it in different ways. You know, TV, this is a beautiful thing about television. It should, this is what it should do. It should make everybody react to things totally differently to anybody else. And that's totally fine. If you disagree with it, it's fine as well. It's a personal thing to Kay or whoever. For me though, Poltergeist was fucking huge. Huge in this.
Oh yeah.
It was massive because I was a massive Poltergeist fan. I was young and I was impressionable, but Dad used to put it on. And then after that, you know, when you're a kid, you rewatch films all the time. Back in the day, there was nothing else to do apart from rewatch your favorites because that's kind of all you had. There was no like Netflix or stuff, new stuff coming all the time. It took time to get things onto video. And yeah, Poltergeist was massive in this. The Goonies, like you said, Lost Boys, there was a little bit, you could say, of Lost Boys in there with the kids and stuff, how they're on their bikes and out and about. But yeah, those were the massive ones for me as well. So it's just a great horror. It goes back into time as well, like those 80s flicks that used to get. So I want to move into how the feel of it, the music, everything was 80s, you know, the clothes. So, Kay, let's start with you this time. I think that's one of the attractions of this show, right? That it took us back into maybe a time where we did these type of things with our friends. Because you don't see that now.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. You can't see it now. You can't see it. I mean, it's very deliberate because it's not just a sense of nostalgia. This, the plot was, it was necessary for the plot for it to be set in the 80s, right? But I mean, they went completely out of their way to form this link. So, I mean, they shot it on a thing called the Red Dragon, which still uses film, which is brilliant, but they also took out 80s grain from old 80s films and put it on top of this so that you're watching it and immediately you go back to, you know, the feel of what it was. Obviously, there's the clothes and, you know, all those kinds of things that had there. Well, it's not weird to watch something that's supposed to be set in the 80s and you're looking at the clothes and you're thinking, oh, I know people that wear that stuff now, you know, just all called retro. But yeah, that was a bit weird. But like you guys said, I mean, the font that was used, that was taken, I think they sent about 30 books to the people who designed the font, and 20 of those books were Stephen King novels. And they just, you know, they just looked at the font, and that's a big thing, right? That's part of the fun of the show, is that people use the font for all different things. And literally everything looks better in Stranger Things font. They've tried this, right? You should go have a look at stuff on Google, but it's brilliant. But the thing is about the 80s, right, is that you were allowed room as a child. There was not so much adult supervision that happened at the time. I don't know when you guys were little, but we used to play in the street. You used to play for hours and hours and hours, and there wouldn't really be a lot of adult supervision there. You go play in the park or in the street or do stuff like that. You go out with your friends. Your parents wouldn't see you for ages.
Yeah,
they, in fact, would shout you to get back in the house. You know, the only thing that could make us come back into the house in the 1980s was MacGyver, right? We were playing cricket out in the street, and your mom would say, like, okay, you have to come back in now. It's nighttime. And you're like, no, ma, like 10 more minutes. MacGyver's starting. Yo, cheers, guys. I got to go, right? I'm out. It's cool. Like, I have to do that. That was like literally the only thing. But that was the thing. And the amazing thing about this is that the Duff brothers, when they were little, that was their lives. They set the town that they set it in is very much like where they come from. And the things that they did, they used to play like, you know, they read comic books and do many video games and stuff like that. So very much the kids and the characters are based on what happens in real life. So it's not just about, oh, there's a sense of nostalgia, then we're going back in time and you can relive these things and the scenes and stuff. It came about the other way around. The plot was written in this very purposeful way because of these very purposeful plot devices. And then all the wonderful homages and stuff came. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what you feel about that, Joey.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to set a TV series in the 80s, but it's a whole other thing to make it feel like it was actually shot during the Ronald Reagan and Rubik's Cube era. Mm-hmm. And like, I think Matt and Ross Duffer just absolutely nailed it. There's so many, and it's a short series. It's only 8 episodes, but the music and everything involved in there is just screams 80s. There's nothing about this as an 80s. And you brought up a good point about kids and how they used to hang out and come home when it was dinner time, and you never looked at a watch in your life because, you know, let's be honest, you didn't have one. You know, there was no cell phones. I never wore a watch. you know, you played outside, whether you were kicking a ball or throwing a ball or playing freeze tag or jailbreak.
Time
or
would fly. Joey, time would fly. You'd go in and it's like 6 o'clock. You're like, what? I only went out like an hour ago.
Yeah.
It's even 6 hours.
It's daytime. That's what it is. It's daytime.
Exactly. And you were so pissed because you're like, what happened? You know what I mean? Because like, you know, you had Saturday, you maybe had Friday after school, but you really only had 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. And the other days were basically school unless it was summertime. So, you know, that's what we did as kids. There was no PlayStation, and you might have had Atari, you might have had Nintendo coming out at that time, but those things never stopped me from going out and having fun with my friends. And that's, you know, I don't see that nowadays. I have all kinds of little kids in my neighborhood, and I'd say maybe a handful of them are the only ones who go out. All the other ones are sitting inside playing with, you know, it's electronics. That's the age of these kids. So it's
and that's the other thing, right? Is that they I don't know whether we can start the spoilers now, but the kids play D&D, right? That is not something that kids do nowadays.
No,
like I've got a bit of a weird little sister who's 7, and we play Adventure Time Monopoly. She would not be playing Monopoly unless it had Adventure Time in it, right? But
yeah,
board games and puzzles and things like that. You know, you have to really try with kids nowadays. You have to really try and sit them down and do that. Well, in those days, you're just looking for something to do. Somebody brought up a new board game. You're like, damn right. Like, let's get that out. We need to. this is going to be thousands of hours of fun, you know?
D&D could have took like 10, 12 hours. It's a long game. It's not something you're finished like Monopoly.
Dragons,
yeah, it could last forever. And kids' attention spans nowadays are, you know, you ask them their name and then they ask you, what's your favorite color? You know what I mean? It's gone like that.
And like, we'll talk about Dungeons and Dragons when we're going to go to the plot next. But I like you both for saying we used to playing football. We'd basically do, we try and make adventure stuff up ourselves, like concoct, mysterious potions using, you know, detergents and shit and make it green and throw it into the bush and say the green man's in there, you know.
Sure.
So do you get what I mean? Where this mythology, this you as a kid would love to go on some kind of adventure. We used to watch Goonies, so in the back garden behind the shed, we'd go and dig holes and see if there's anything underground, you know, because the Goonies was all under the fucking city type thing. So we'd be digging, and we'd find like old coins and old monuments, like, you know, because in our area, it's been around, the area's been around since the 40s, 50s. So when we're digging, we're finding little things, we're like, oh my God, the doubloon, you know, the fucking one-eyed willies here, you know? So do you get what I mean?
You know?
It's Stranger Things brings that to the fore. And not only that, when you talk about 80s, did you want to say something, Kay, before I go on?
No, you go on. I'll go after you guys.
They just wanted to, when you watch it, you get the wired phones and how she's buying a new phone each time. And they're so integral into the plot because, do you get what I mean? They're using stuff from the 80s. It makes you feel like, yeah, man, I remember the phones like that. I have to dial them with my finger. And like, as a kid, if it was stiff, you'd hurt your finger sometimes. Cause if it was a stiff dial, you'd be like, oh God, I've got the number wrong. Shit. You'd have to start again.
Those took ages, right?
Oh,
you have to go like all the way around.
Oh.
And if your number started with like with a 9 or some shit, you were like, oh my God, dude,
really,
why do you have this number?
If
and you'd be like, shh, chugga,
ringing local, it's six numbers. If you're ringing local, it's six numbers. If you're ringing like London or Manchester, where my cousins were, it'd be like another four numbers. You'd be like, fuck off, man. Like, my fingers are hurting. Like, honestly, as a kid, it was hilarious when it makes you, what I'm saying is it gets the experiences out. A show like that, when you take it back, a lot of people don't think about it like that. I like to immerse myself into something I like or think about it a bit more deeper. Do you get what I mean? And I think if you love something, you do. And I think they brought that out of the hardcore, you know, viewers and the people that really wanted to. Actually, the people that they hooked, I think it's the TV show that does that, not you. The TV show can either hook you or it doesn't. So I think they hooked everybody, didn't they? On this, so
that was a complete, total immersion in this world, right? And I don't know if like it's a cool place to talk about that, but I thought the music did that so well. I mean, right from the get-go, right? That opening sequence—it's one of the only opening sequences I actually watch. Usually, you know, you skip them and you go, you just bugger this. I'll just, you know, how long is it? 1.5 minutes. I'll hit 1.5 minutes on the video and go there.
You're so right.
And They did this so specifically. And what was interesting about this, I don't know if any marketing students or communication and media students are watching this, but when I was taught about advertising in university, they told me that music is not really that important. 80% of information comes from the graphical information and only 20% comes from music. I tell everybody that is utter bullshit. Music will inform the attitude that you form towards something. You can say the exact same lines over two different pieces of music and you will feel differently about what that person has said. And they understood this completely, the Duff Brothers. And what they did is they went to a band called Survive, who do this electro, you know, synth music brilliantly. They're absolutely brilliant with it. But they did the picture alongside the music. So this is, they gave the music a huge, huge role, and Survive responded, right? They responded to such an extent that the music informed, like, who to cast, how to shoot, what to do during that scene. And then that would in turn go back, and the Survive was saying they couldn't actually use the same music many times as you do, you know, like in Star Wars, which would be cool. You know, you'd have Vader's theme coming up a couple times, or Luke's theme, or something like in music generally, right?
Yeah, I know
they
that.
Couldn't do that because each thing was so like, so they'd have a theme for Will, right? Will goes missing, but then they'd have a thing where it's Will and his mom. And it was a completely different moment. And so they wrote a completely different music for it. And they kept on doing this. And there's lots of really cool music in there, right? Like Foreigner, Echo and the Bunnymen, Peter Gabriel does a ridiculous cover of David Bowie's Heroes. These all go so well with what's happening because of the choice of band. But I mean, on that music, and maybe, you know, we're just getting into plot a little bit, but how they use the Clashes, Should I Stay or Should I Go, is absolutely exceptional. That piece of music is not meant for this picture. That piece of music is a cheeky little, you know, quick song. It's wonderful, but they use it for moments that are like heartfelt and drawn out and emotional. That takes art. You have to, you know, you have to really go into it. You have to build characters that are real to be able to do that. And they absolutely nailed it. Everything was just an immersion in this world.
Wow. You nailed that.
Yeah, it's hard to really add much to that because you talked about the music. The only thing I would really add to it is they used John Carpenter, basically Carpenter to a T. John Carpenter, famous for Escape from New York, The Thing, The Fog, and my personal all-time favorite horror film, Halloween, Michael Myers. They just used him as the perfect example to do this. But you talked about Should I Stay or Should I Go, a Clash masterpiece. They used it perfectly. You know, and that, I think you ended up at the Peter Gabriel rendition of Heroes was pretty awesome. David Bowie's a genius. Mm. So the music and the band Survive, who was actually from Texas, believe it or not, you know, it's kind of funny because you're like, Texas? Really? Yeah, they're actually from Texas. So it's pretty funny. And they have like three albums out. Like just nobody knows who they are until they did that score.
Wow. Well, you know what? We're going to move on. We're going to move on to the plot now. But before we do, because I'm a stato and this type of shit's got to happen on the box, because I have found some ratings provided to Variety by Symphony Advanced Media, and they reveal that the first 8 episodes of Stranger Things, which is all they were, basically make up the third most watched seasons basically in the last year. So basically in the first 35 days of this streaming service, this drama average 14.07 million adults 18 to 49. So basically that's just mad. So in that first 35 days, Fuller House and Orange is the New Black, they were the only ones that drew more in that demo, you know, in that demographic in the first 35 days. But obviously since then, I reckon it's going to be huge. It's going to be much more because I think this grew by word of mouth as well. So if you think about it, the first 35 days, 14.07 million for Stranger Things, Making a Murderer, 13.35 million, Daredevil, 13.35 million, Jessica Jones, 6.26 million in their first 35 days. So you just look at the impact it had. It doesn't have Marvel behind it, you know? it didn't have a ton of marketing behind it either, to be honest. You know, I don't think it had huge, like Orange is the New Black was everywhere. Stuff like that. And it just took over in that first month. And I think this was written in August this year, this piece on Variety. So I think since then it must have become the biggest, the most watched show on Netflix. So I'll try and
I'll try and source that for the late end of the show if I can. But yeah, that's the statistical part of the show. We'll try and do that every week if we can, or every time we have a show. But okay, let's go into the plot. And Joey, we'll start with you then on this. Obviously, a game that really it starts with Dungeons and Dragons, right? So
yeah,
this is more of a cartoon for me. And I sent you the cartoon yesterday in WhatsApp. I don't know if it's the same. It's got to be the same one, right? It's got to be the same thing, because I never played the game. But it's got to be related to the game, hasn't it? Or is that a totally different cartoon?
I'm thinking it's probably the same thing.
A spin-off.
It could be a spin-off. But the game itself, I actually WhatsApped you a picture of the game that I had as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny because I really didn't play it. but I think the reason is because it's when you first – if you don't have a lot of friends who are into it, you can't just pick that game up and go, let's play. It doesn't work that way. There's no start and end. Like, as every board game basically has a start and end. With D&D, there's not. So the funny thing about D&D is it's been around. The game was released in 74, but it didn't become popular until the 80s. So it's, you know, I had to do a lot of research about, yeah, it's crazy. How do you play this? What's it all about? So I did some research while I was laying in bed sick last night, and I thought about the main characters, and yeah. As I'm throwing up, I thought about the main characters, and I do know. Just a FYI, I am sick as a dog, but I wanted to do this. So anyway, I thought about the characters, the main characters, the guys, and 11. And I'm thinking, like, I do know background about some characters who fought in Dungeons and Dragons, so to speak, like the pieces, game pieces. So I thought, Mike, he is what you call a paladin. He's a fighter who acts in the name of good and order. Clearly, he's the dungeon master. That was his character. Will would be a rogue, very stealthy and good at hiding. Dustin is a bard, B-A-R-D, great way with words, also very smart and diplomatic. Lucas would be a ranger, independent and skilled hunter, who uses their wilderness skills to hunt down enemies. Lucas definitely did that. And there's 11, who would be your sorcerer, innate ability to use spells. Clearly, she has the powers with her mind to do that. So that was my dork breakdown.
That was Joey, just interrupt you quickly. There was a little thing on somewhere I saw, one of the web pages, and it's unfortunate I don't have it anymore, but somebody was saying that in that opening scene of D&D, when they were saying it, there was the princess was called out, and that was
11.
No, the princess was the sister, the older sister. And then the fallen prince was sort of that photographer brother. I'm really bad with names. I'm sorry.
Jonathan.
Yeah. Jonathan. And how each Nancy. Person would actually have a character, like that, and their character traits would be brought out in that way.
Yeah, it's really cool. Did we want to talk about the Demogorgon, or do we want
to? Yeah, I mean, we're going on to the plot now. So basically we're talking about how the kickoff by playing this game. And then I think the Demogorgon is perfect timing here. I mean, because Will goes home and kind of fucking disappears. So the next day, no one knows where the fuck he is. And so let's go with the Demogorgon here, Joey, because I think Kay just spoke a bit about the start as well with the Dungeons & Dragons. So yeah, you can go with this.
Yeah, so the Demogorgon is the monster that they remember. This is the first episode. It's the biggest foreshadowing ever. They don't defeat him. So he ends up, you know, that Demogorgon ends up being in real life in the plot. That's the monster they're fighting. But a little background behind it is Demogorgons actually predate Dungeons and Dragons years, years beforehand. Demogorgons were being written about in Christian literature around 400 AD. So this dates a long way back. Demogorgon kind of styles himself as the Prince of Demons, rules over the realm called the Abyss, which in Stranger Things is basically the Upside Down, what 11 calls it, or the Realm of Shadow, or I think it's Realm of Shadows they call it.
Veil of Shadows or whatever.
Veil of Shadows, yeah, I'm sorry, you're right.
It's okay.
And it's the home to demons. And basically the whole point of this realm is just to destroy and spread chaos. There's no other point to it. It's a bizarre looking creature. It's got two heads normally. Now, in Stranger Things, it only has the one, which ends up looking like a flower. But it normally has two heads, long tentacles, and hands that are covered in fur. It's an awful-looking thing. I mean, you think of the most disgusting thing you can think of, and this looks like it. It actually has the heads, if you want me to go even deeper to it, has names of the two heads. One's Emil, and Hetherida, if I'm saying that right, which I'm probably not.
My word. Wow.
Yeah. So I really broke this down in the complete dork, complete, you know.
It seems more evil now that it has names.
Yeah. Very much so, right?
Isn't it? Like, wow. Emil. Yeah. Damn, dude.
I know.
And it's not Hesky, is it? Anyway.
I was just breaking. That's basically the breakdown of what a Demogorgon would normally look like, how it was written back in the Christian times. But yeah, that's basically it.
In this one, though, it's a bit different. It's kind of like the unknown, really, isn't it? Kind of, because you don't know where it's come from when you're watching it at the start. You don't know how it's appeared. It's just this monster in a realm, and it doesn't. I mean, even when it ends. It's not clear what the mythology around it is, but I think you can go into other stuff, can't you, on this before we do talk about the ending and stuff.
Yeah, that was a thing. The first experience you get of the Demogorgon is just pure terror. When Will is scrabbling about and looking for things and wondering what that sound was that's coming from. I mean, that I was not expecting that. I literally shit myself when okay, not literally, but like I was properly scared of what was going to happen. And I mean, I know like people will say like, no, a kid would run away. I've seen a couple of things. Again, kids in the '80s were sort of not like that. They kids in the '80s wanted to take things apart and build different things. This is the golden age of Lego, right? Basically, if you watch the Lego movie, 80s kids are the spaceman. Who's like, spaceship, spaceship, spaceship. Those are 80s kids. They just wanted to build things over and over and over again, different things all the time. They're alert, they're active, they're imaginative, and they were their own heroes. They made their own solutions. They, like, kids had a very actual strong link to, like, what was happening in their communities, right? There was a very big emphasis on doing the right thing, that sort of stuff, right? It was different from now. But then the Demogorgon, when you see the Demogorgon, oh my, it is pure terror. And what makes this thing worse is it seems like it is the perfect hunter, right? It does, you know, it mimics it. It makes you look over there and it's behind you. It dips in and out. And this is where we start to get this incredible mythology of what's happening in this world. I don't know if the Demogorgon looked like the thing from the Little Shop of Horrors to anybody else, but
yeah, a little bit.
the head sort of looked like it, you know.
That's colorful. But basically, didn't they put in something like they for Will? There was no blood there, but for when Barb being Nancy's friend, Nancy being
you
know, for Barb it was more it smelled blood, right?
At the end, that's how they tried to attract it when they cut their hands when Nancy and Jonathan cut their hands to attract it.
It kind of was. Different to how what happened with Will, though, right? So that's the only thing that I questioned.
Yeah, very different.
I just
questioned. Oh man, there's so much stuff though, Gags, you can question this thing. Like when I was watching it, I was like, what the hell, right? Because what we have here is a link from our world to the upside down, the veil of shadows kind of thing. That's a psychic power link, right? This weird agency is doing some weird experiments, which actually was a thing in the '80s, right? I know it sounds weird, but they try to do that. They try to find people with psychic power. That's a very strong sort of, accusation from people towards the government, but they took them and did experiments, try to expose this power, how they could use it for military purposes. But it's easy for us to sort of believe that was happening, basically, is what I'm saying. And then you have this thing where she's trying something and that they basically use it for long range surveillance. And something happens. Watches in this world and the Demogorgon is revealed and it's revealed as utterly terrifying, right? In this complete shadow. But there's so much stuff that happens after that as we discover what happens in the Veil of Shadows, right? So how does that power connect? How does it jump from its world to our world? How did it come there? Did Eleven call it? Was it a beacon or did it come there by itself? Is it able to jump in between these worlds? And this is where it gets weird because the Veil of Shadows looks exactly like our world. Why does it do that? Is it just a different dimension? Or linked with a psychic power, is it mirroring somehow our world?
Yes.
Because dogs can sense it, right?
Is it a coincidence that Eleven is free at the same time this starts happening?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, remember, Eleven, that was Eleven's fault that the dimension was there. she tore that open. Remember when she was looking? Remember when Brenner had her under and was doing experiments with her? She accidentally opened that portal to let him out.
Yeah.
Do you remember that part?
Yeah, that's but it might be a portal. But she, what I'm saying is, it might be that, like, if it was a portal, then it would have to be to a dimension that almost exactly mimics ours. The other insinuation, though, is that it's created by us, you know, by a psychic power. It's like, you know, somebody to create a world, you wouldn't just create a world that's there. You would create one that exactly mirrored ours because that's easier. Everything is just a bit weirder.
I know.
And that's where all these things come from, like the Demogorgon. And oh my God, is Demogorgon not the best name for an evil thing ever? Because my God, right?
Sounds really bad.
It's just, you tell that to a newborn kid, that kid's going to start crying. Demogorgon.
Newborn kid. Let's do to Parker. Let's tell Parker. Parker will be. Yeah. No, basically, I know what you're saying, because when the Demogorgon comes and takes them, it's not like he stays in our world. He's gone immediately.
Yeah. Gone.
Comes immediately. And goes. It's gone. And even there's a scene during the movie where, you know, Will says, "I'm right here." You know, when she does the light stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm right here. And then there's a shape of the Demogorgon in the wall. So it's there, but it's not. I know what you're saying. It's another world, but how does it come and go? Like, there's so many questions, and
I think that's
the beauty of it, though, isn't it? That
not
everything is.
And the Demogorgon itself, right? Because the demo, it's one. We assume it's one, and there's only one that really penetrates and this thing. And what Joey, what you were saying was really intriguing there. The prince of, you know, a prince of demons. Where are the other demons? Why is there only one? Or, you know, if they are very few, if they are so few that we don't see multitudes, then where are they?
More.
You know,
I think there's 10 more.
And then we see what, you know, towards the end of it, but I mean, as we go deeper into the Veil of Shadows, something that looks like eggs, larval stage of something. If this thing can reproduce, where's everything else? You know, it's just, there's so many questions about this thing that it just opens up an encyclopedia of intrigue.
Joey,
is what it is.
I mean, that's amazing. And Joey, I'm going to come to you with a little bit of a twist on this. And then we're going to a few of the plot lines in the show, because that's the major one, obviously. But there's so many other underlying ones of other characters, and we'll go into the characters as well. But she's 11. Her name is 11. It points to me that there's another 10.
Oh, yeah.
So that means there could be another 10 Demogorgons about somewhere. I don't know if you thought that way. I mean, that's how I thought of it.
No, I definitely did. And the Demogorgon actually acts like, and you guys will know this because you're big Marvel fans, Hydra. You know how Hydra, you cut off one head and two grow? That's how the Demogorgon acts.
Ah.
Yeah, so it's the same thing, which is why at the end when Nancy and Jonathan, they thought they burned him and killed him, it doesn't work that way. There's a certain way you have to kill the Demogorgon, which I believe the brothers who created the show actually hinted at that. They said we couldn't give away too much or else we wouldn't have a season two, basically. So if they gave away so many secrets, they have to have people guessing. It's the whole point of a show. Unless you just want one season, then they could have made, you know, maybe 16 episodes instead of 8. But yeah, I mean, the Demogorgon is definitely going to play a part in it, I think, in the second season. And I definitely don't think I don't think they killed it. I think 11, I've seen some theories where 11 is now going to be actually part of it. Part of the Demogorgon, so to speak, like they're almost linked up because she killed it. It's a really strange theory. So she kills it and then becomes part of it because it didn't really die because she didn't kill it the proper way.
Wow, that'll be
almost. So
she,
yeah, it'd be
she
really
becomes
really,
negative role.
Basically, wow. That's right. Exactly. Yeah, and
okay.
Then maybe
we don't
the
want
boys
to do too
to
much of a. We don't want to preview too much, but we'll do a preview pod on it, guys. I'll get you back next year when it's coming out. But I wanted to just say, is there anything more on the mythology or you know the monster side of things, guys? Before I move on to a few more plot lines.
No, I'm all good.
No, Joey.
Yeah, no. Same here.
Okay, so basically, it's not just the horror aspect to this. You know, you have other plots, and we can, if you don't want to discuss them, we just go through them. We have the teenage side of things where Nancy's, you know, wants to link up with this boyfriend, or have this popular boyfriend. He obviously wants to use her for his own stuff. You have Jonathan who fancies her, but he's the loser. You then have the single mother aspect of it. You have a single father, you have a father who's lost everything in the sheriff. You know? So there's so many different other... There's like... I think there's four. Is that four plots? Pretty much three or four plots going on at the same time? Or was there any more that you guys had? Because obviously Winona Ryder, we haven't even mentioned her yet. She had a major part as Will's mom. And you can see the struggles, you know, of a mother raising two children on her own. The father's obviously about, but he's with somebody else. And it's a plot line that goes the whole way. And also a crazy person. That she's treated to be crazy, and she so isn't. She knows, she can hear it, she can feel him. And then there's the sheriff who's lost a child. So he's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of weird because there's mixed, I don't know, Joey, if you felt them, there was mixed signals with the sheriff.
Yeah, that was, for me, that was the hardest part to watch. Anybody who has kids and then had to watch those scenes where his daughter is basically dying of cancer and he, you know, he's reading to her. That is heartbreaking. I have little kids and I can only imagine.
Jim Hopper, that would be, that's his name, isn't it?
Jim Hopper. Yeah. Jim Hopper, the Hawkins Police Department detective. It's hard to watch that. But Winona Ryder, I think, smashes it. She's so good. And I was never a real big Winona Neither Ryder me. Beforehand. Neither like me. She didn't do anything for me. And then I watched this and I was like, whoa, she was and remember, this is only 8 episodes. To have that kind of effect on somebody who's watching this in 8 episodes is really impressive. It shows her acting chops. But
a few people said that's just her being normal, but it's okay.
Well, this is the thing though. I mean, in both those roles, I thought they were really interesting. You have both of those roles of adults going through properly messed up experiences, like not messed up, but just very difficult. Just, it's so difficult for one person to deal with. And they couldn't, you know, it's Joey, like you say, it's unnatural. For a parent to bury their child, that might be the most, you know, extremely unnatural thing that we could have as human beings. That's just not something we're built for, you know. And on the other hand, you have somebody who handles absolutely everything. And the thing is about Winona's character is it is her, because she has had to go through that. She had a wonderful start to her career and then slowly was brought down. And particularly there was a movie to continue the sci-fi theme, but it was about Dracula, and it was with a couple of other really, really big male actors. Right. And this set was horrible. It was extremely misogynistic, and she was signed on. She had to do, but the way they treated her was absolutely disgusting, and it broke her. It broke her a bit. And then you get the strange behavior that she does in Winona Ryder world, and people make fun of her and that kind of thing. And I thought that they were trying to comment on that in the episodes of Stranger Things, where you had a father who's gone through something very traumatic. And whenever he does something that is a little bit crazy, it immediately gets written off to, nah, it's okay, he's one of the guys. And he's allowed to continue in this very important capacity, right? Whereas Winona Ryder, no one understands what she's going through, because we don't really care about single mothers and all the things that they're going. We don't really want to really reach our hand out to say, you know, keep on doing this important job. She works in a store. She has to fight, you know, to get, while going through this really traumatic thing of her son being lost, she has to fight to get time off and, you know, for people to sort of help her a little bit. And all the while, people are just saying, this woman is absolutely crazy. And you're ready to believe the entire time, this woman is completely crazy. And it turns out, in the end, really, she, along with Detective Hopper, were the only actual two adults really doing anything. And she couldn't do anything because she was disenfranchised by the whole entire, you know, community around there. He was trying to do something, but he's buckled by the law and all the things that are happening in you know, with the government, and he's only got a certain amount of clearance, and he eventually has to break into that place. But I thought that was a really nice sort of commentary to say that, hey, you know, she did have a really tough time, but this is sort of like what it was. And she was right. You know, in some way she was right. So I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed how the Duff brothers brought those two things alongside the plot.
It was good. I don't know if you picked up on anything with Jim Hopper, but I thought there was a bit of a link between him and that facility. For some reason, there just seemed a little bit of...
Almost like he was remembering something as he's walking through there or something.
Yes, yeah. I think there might be more to this story. I picked that up from it. I don't know whether Joey or you both picked up on anything like that, but I certainly did.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I actually think, and this is a theory on my own, I actually just thought that
he might have been an experiment there at one time, and then maybe this is him now. You're seeing him as an adult, but maybe he was a child who was experimented on there. That was the first thing I thought, because especially at the end when you have random cars picking him up, you know, blacked out cars, and you look like government officials at the end, and he just willingly gets in. So that was my first thing there. I was like, you know what? I think he might have been
number one. He might
have, yeah, he could have.
He's
been.
He's one. He's one.
You know, clearly, that guy was doing Brenner, the scientist, was doing experiments on many, many different people, not just 11 and the 10 who were before her.
Yeah, and also Brenner, we don't know if he's dead or not. This is a scientist guy, by the way. If you're not keeping up, the main guy who's apparently her papa, you know, her dad, or whoever she calls. Apparently, we're not sure whether he's dead or not. So that's an interesting thing if he's back in the next season. Let's move on to really the stars. Unless you want to talk, I'm not too interested in talking about Nancy, Jonathan, and Steve. Unless you are, I mean, it's a standard story, teenage story that's told in so many movies, and you know, isn't it?
I thought the only notable thing about the teenagers really were that they were like, I thought they were just there to show how bad the adults were at responding to this thing, because it was basically the younger you were in the show, the quicker you responded, the more seriously you took the threat that was coming. The teenagers took a little while, and then they sort of, you know, they came up and they did into, but really they were sort of, they were almost peripheral, right? Until Nancy and Jonathan decided to trap the Demogorgon. That was, you know, and then you get the redemption of that guy, which I was like, ah, man. I sort of want him to get hurt a little bit more. You know, the jock with the hair.
Steve.
Yeah. I agree with you, Gax.
He's going to come good though, isn't he? Now, obviously, he's going to be. Yeah. He's going to come to senses in the second season. He's in the entire second season as well, apparently. So he's obviously going to be on the right side of things and not such a cock anymore.
Yeah.
But the stars of the show. And there's absolutely no way we can do Stranger Things without talking about, you know, Mike, Dustin, Luke, and Will. And I mean, the three of them more than Will. Will's probably going to have more work to do in the second season. And you know what? We'll get to Will last, because I reckon the second season's going to be all about him in a different way now with him on screen. Mm. So he's going to get a chance to show what he's made of on screen. In terms of Mike, Finn, Wolfhard, Dustin Henderson, how do you say this guy's name? Gaten Matarazzo? Is that how you say it? And then obviously, Luke is Caleb McLaughlin. I think that's how you say it. But anyway, those three for me were absolutely fantastic. So Joey, I don't know if you've got anything. I mean, for me, my favorite is Dustin. Out of the whole show, Dustin's my favorite. But I want to hear from you. I'll go into Dustin later, why I think he's my favorite in little bits, but his performance. But what about yourself at the child actors?
Dustin was my second favorite behind 11. I mean, 11's a red.
I totally forgot about 11 child actor. Yes, we talked about 11 so much.
What's her name? Millie Bobby Brown?
Yeah, is kind of hysterical because the Bobby Brown part, you know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, he's a crazy ass singer at this point. Yeah, Bobby Brown. Remember, he was a child singer.
You can play that game.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where to go from after that.
Right, yeah, obviously Millie Bobby, but she's your favorite then. Okay, cool.
Yeah, 11 was my favorite. I mean, it's hard to play a little girl playing with those psychokinetic powers.
Wow.
That is really hard to do. I mean, she's basically moving objects with her mind. She killed it. She made it look like she was actually doing that. Mm-hmm. And remember, she doesn't really talk much, which makes it even more difficult. That's so hard. You don't have lines, and you're coming across, in my opinion, as the best. Powerful. She was the best part of this whole series, in my opinion. But yeah, Dustin was, he's just you look at him and you laugh. Why wouldn't you want to be around a kid like that? You know, he's funny. He's bubbly. He's like everything you want in a friend. So he was my second favorite. But the other kids killed it too. Caleb McLaughlin, who played Lucas, like you said. And Mike, who was played by, what's that kid's name? Oh, man. Oh, Finn Wolfhard. Yeah, he was really good too. And I think he had one of the best lines, maybe the best line in the whole movie, when he said, remember when they were dressing up L11? And like they put the pink dress on her, they put the blonde wig on her. He puts the makeup on her, then she walks out of the bathroom and he goes, pretty, good because they didn't want his buddies to know that he was really into her. Yeah. I thought that was the best line of the whole movie.
I thought there was loads of others as well, but I'm going to go last on not lines, but in. Yeah, anyway, I will go last because Kay might just cover it, and I want Kay to talk more. So, Kay, go on. Out of the four, I was going to do the male ones first before moving to 11, but Joey just pissed on my parade. So let's just take all four of them. Who is your favorite? And anything that I'm going to go into their relationship after we've talked about their performances and stuff. So, go on.
I didn't actually have a favorite from the group of kids, to be honest with you. I loved 11. I loved the performance. I thought she was wonderful, but that was because of this dynamic that the kids had, which I thought was sensational. This is really hard to do for actors, right? I mean, and we're talking about kid actors. I mean, this was absolutely off the charts awesome, but what they did with being together. And, you know, you have your different groups and the group dynamics, I thought, were acted out so brilliantly. You always felt that these kids were one thing. They were one thing together. And when I felt this was when, I was starting to get a bit irritated with Luke because I wanted the plot to advance, and he just kept on wanting to stake his, you know, I'm your best friend. And I love Luke. I love his strength and his courage and that kind of thing. But just that one episode. Yeah. Just that one episode. I was like, come on. You have to go. Just go. Come on.
But I thought it was vital.
It was absolutely vital.
In a group
because
of
when
friends.
He wasn't there, when he wasn't there, you notice it so hard.
No.
And you're thinking, this is wrong.
That's not
this is wrong. Friend. This group is wrong.
Yeah. My point is, it was vital because as a child, when you're there and you've got a group of friends, when a new person comes in and it kind of changes the dynamic of the group and one
jealousy.
Of the
jealousy.
It's a massive thing in kids. It happens. It's
not
usual. It's not anything abnormal. It's totally normal. And it was reality. I wanted to see that this happens in friends. This happens with kids. They can get insecure. And the kid, Luke, he got insecure with it. And it was a brilliant scene where they're fighting and she hits him off, you know, she feels really, bad about it. But Mike, at the point, he's in such a conundrum, you know, he's so stuck, and that was really well acted out.
I've got to say, Mike did also really well. I think very few people will pick out Mike as their favorite, but it's very difficult to be the hero because you have to allow every other character to revolve around you while you still assume something of like a little bit of leadership, but you have to take on an almost a bit of a wooden stance because people have to project upon you and you have to be this person that's almost above everything that's happening, you know, a little bit. But I thought he did that and put out quite a lot of personality and it was completely believable. You know, he wasn't so much the leader, just somebody everybody trusted. That's so hard to pull off. So, I mean, really, I mean, kudos to all these kids because I thought, like I said, the group dynamics were perfect. Absolutely perfect.
He played the Mikey role from Goonies, you know, Mikey.
Yeah.
You know? And going on from that trajectory, I've nicely set this up for myself here. Dustin played Chunk. kind of, because he was just hilarious and like not having any teeth, you know, or the way it was, the way, and he was talking, and the one scene that made me piss myself laughing was when 11 tries to take off her clothes in front of them, and then Dustin just can't get over it. He can't get over it that she's not from this world, man. She's not from this area. I don't know where she's from, because he keeps on pretending to take his top off. Like, you know, he keeps on saying, look, she was going to do this. She was going to do this. How can you, like, she's not normal. And he does it like 3 or 4 times in that next 5 minutes bit. And oh my God, I just wanted to die laughing. It was such a great scene. I just thought it brings over him as well. Like he can't get over things quick. He's the kid that just, you know, is relentless with points and they have to shame to shut up sometimes, you know, he's kind of me. So, you know, I was always called Chunk, you know, do the truffle shuffle gags, you know, and stuff like that. If you remember it, Chunk takes his top off,
his shirt off
and does his flab has to shake. My cousins and my family used to make me do it and bully me to do it just as fun, you know, but that's what I mean. It kind of reminded me of him. He was the funny one. He was the one that made you laugh and had that relief in the show where if you knew Dustin was in the scene, there would be something funny or he'd make a funny face And really interesting tidbits were that when they, you know, because obviously you shoot the show, if you know anything about how you shoot stuff, you kind of do the dubbing afterwards. They kind of they kind of put your voice again. And they couldn't do any of that for the child characters, especially Dustin, because it took so long to shoot that these guys grew up. And they couldn't reshoot anything. And Dustin's voice got deeper. And so when the second season is purposely a year ahead, because they have to show the growth of the kids that they've shot up and that their voices have changed, because Dustin's voice will be much deeper now. So there's all these little things that were going on that in the background that we won't know, but I like these little tidbits. You know what I'm fucking like. But so that was kind of, and I loved the whole thing about these three was the relationship. Like we've just talked about the ups and downs, the walkie talkie. We haven't even talked about the fucking walkie talkie. Another bit of the '80s. What was a massive part of this show, like me and my kids were doing over and out, because my kids watched it. My kids watched this. I know it's a horror, and there were some horror type of parts, but my eldest just wanted to watch it after she heard me talking about it to one of my friends. She said, "Dad, let me." So we watched it, and in the end, if she's WhatsApping me, she's 12 now, so she's got, because she's at senior school, she's got WhatsApp. We'd actually put over and out at the end of everything that we'd just type. Forget talking. We'd be like, what, over and out? It's just that it takes you, you know, you get involved in things and you love it. And I love it that my kids love everything that I do, like Marvel and Star Wars, but she loved this too. She loves, you know, other shows too. So, I mean, this one, it struck a chord with her. And even though she's not from the 80s, she learnt what technology was like back then, like with the phone. She was like, what? You know, and it's just such a good thing for others to watch that aren't from that era, how it was back then, how difficult it was. We couldn't text each other. When you don't know where anyone is and you can't find them, imagine the fucking stress, the strain on families when your kid goes missing and you can't just give them a bell or a text or see if they've been on Facebook in the last 20 minutes that they're all right. You know, you can't do shit like that. It's all out there in this big, wide world where you don't know where they are. And imagine if something happens. It is such a easier place to live now. Okay, it's a harder place to live in so many other ways. In terms of keeping tabs on someone or making sure they're okay, it's such an easier place with technology. And I just thought that brought that, there was those things coming out of the show as well, that it's just so hard to communicate with people. Like, imagine there's some scenes in the show where, like, oh man, I wish he had a mobile. You could just tell him to come over.
Exactly, that happened a couple of times actually.
Sure,
but that's a beautiful thing about setting it in the '80s, right? Because immediately you just think, oh, just call him on his cell. You're like, oh, but you can't do that. So how are you going to get? How would you get? Can you call? Who are you? What the fuck am I going to do? How do you get hold of this kid? Oh my, and that panic rises in you a little bit, you know. I think the only thing you can do is like write a fucking letter out. Hopefully the postman comes by in the next couple of months, because otherwise it's not happening.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's pretty much a really good part of the Dr. Brenner. I thought he played an evil role really well, by the way, while we're doing characters and stuff. And I thought Jim Hopper was fantastic in his role as the father, the hurt father, you know, and the sheriff. Because at the start, he's a bit of a cock, isn't he, Jim Hopper? You think he's a bit of an idiot, the way he just strolls into work. And
just then, a lazy bastard,
changes the perception. Drunk too. The perception of him changes so much by the fourth, fifth episode. You're like, I want him to find it, you know, find him, and I want him to succeed here. And the whole backstory, just, they totally change your initial perception of this character. And that's another beautiful thing. I love it when a show can do that. They show you someone who's just an absolute slob, and then all of a sudden you want this slob to fucking win or at least succeed. And so is there any other characters or anything that we've missed from the characters, guys, that Joey, that you want to discuss, or have we covered everything, you think?
For me, you covered everything.
Okay. Anything that we missed?
I think the only thing I'd add there is Matt Modine was brilliant as the was it Brenner?
Yeah.
With a bad guy. But yeah, like Eleven, like you said, Joey, Eleven didn't have a lot of lines. He didn't also have a lot of lines, but I despise that character. I hated him for what he did and how he raised Eleven. And I just, every time I saw him after a while, I just got this, you know, nausea in my gut. And I thought that was, you know, he was, this is the thing with famous people, right? You see famous people and they suddenly stop being like, Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise in every movie. Right? He's not like Agent whatever ever. He's Tom Cruise. And Bruce Willis is Bruce Willis. He's going to save the world, right? That's what these guys do. So when you see a famous person, it's hard to, you know, really portray this character of you know, because you only see the what this person's famous for. And I thought him and Winona did so well in just allowing us to forget who they were and focusing on the characters. That was super, super good acting.
Totally agree. He was great. And okay, so that's our characters. We talked about who our favorites were. Do we want to do quick favorite moments of the show?
Yeah, I'd like to do just one. We talked about a lot of it already, but if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about one scene that was probably my favorite in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was when I think it was Mike and Dustin, the two boys who cornered them on the cliff, Troy, and I don't remember the friend's name.
Mm-hmm.
And when he basically has the switchblade to Dustin's face and he threatens that he's going to cut out the rest of his teeth. I know it's not funny, but like he doesn't have a lot of teeth, so it's like he's... So Mike jumps from the cliff, but Elle, this is awesome. She uses her powers to basically lift him. I mean, he would have died. He would have fell into that lake and died. She lifts him back up onto it. I thought that was just
great scene.
Just great scene. That scene and I think all of Eleven's backstories were probably my favorite scenes.
Very comic type scenes, I noticed.
Yes. Of course.
Project X, yes.
Yes, of course. It's very
Wolverine
X-Men
to a T.
Very,
yeah.
Very X-Men type stuff, I thought. Kay, what was your favorite scene?
I had two favorite scenes. One was just for the action of it, because I wasn't expecting it again. But when Eleven lifted the van, you know, like it's coming for the bike and she just like,
flips it.
Oh my word. I didn't expect that. And, you know, we hadn't had any huge action sequences. And for that to come out, I was a bit shocked. But my favorite scene was actually the dummy body scene where Winona Ryder goes to, you know, she doesn't recognize her son as this thing that they say is her son's body. And she goes and looks at it and, you know, it starts to cut around. And when the detective comes in and cuts the body and pulls out the stuffing, that it absolutely turned me. I didn't know what was going on in the story anymore. That, you know, why would that government agency, why would they create a fake body, you know, to put there? And I'm just like, are they working with, did they know about the Veil of Shadows beforehand? Why would they have that ability to do that? How many times have they done this before? Why is that ability to do that so close to this little sleepy town? And, you know, all that stuff came up. So that was a great scene because, of the questions it just sort of threw up. It was such a horrible illusion until that, you know, of what was happening in the sleepy town and what it could be. And it fits in so well with what you're saying, Gags, of maybe foreshadowing what that institution's history is with this town and the people in the town and so on and so on.
I think coming up with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there's a reason why they don't go to major cities. Remember, major cities draws major attention.
And this won't.
This won't. It's like the X-Files.
God, we totally forgot. This is also very similar to the X-Files.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
wow.
That's why I put it in there, because I'm like, I can't finish this pod without saying that. We didn't bring it up
before.
Wow.
I feel X-Files, terrible now for not mentioning that.
X-Files is massively comparable.
Joey, Kay, just save the pod.
Save the pod. Save the world. Right, sorry. Kay, what's the second? Did you go through both there?
That was the second. The first one was the flipping of the van. The second one was the dummy body.
I liked when she breaks people's necks when she's in the experimental phase. Very Heroes. Who's the villain? Siler type stuff in Heroes. Have you remember Heroes?
Siler.
He break people's necks like that. And I loved the brother scenes when they're bonding before, you know, Mike and thinking, you know, should I stay or should I go stuff. And sorry, Will and is it Will?
Jonathan and Will.
That's right, Jonathan and Will. I'll get confused with the guys' names. so there was those scenes that were really good. I loved it whenever the Demogorgon appeared and just ate people up and fucked off. it's dead weird that, you know, he's taking pictures. When it's time to take pictures, right, the fucking Demogorgon takes the woman and goes and you're just like sitting there and like changing to fucking, oh man, it's like, dude, you know, it just hated. This is where you should have had a smartphone.
You know, yeah. That's another reason. That's another thing. You know, like,
it could have been recording it.
It could have been recording it. But anything with the child characters together running away from people when they come to the house and they run and they you know they got to get away. All that stuff was great. I love the chase type of thing and kids. Anything that reminded me of kind of like Goonies where they're all together and stuff like that. The childhood type of moments really you connect with more. I enjoyed all those and the special effects, obviously, in scenes. Like you said, Joey covered that type of stuff. We need to see more of that in season two. I think we will. It'll go further and further now. They can play more with powers and stuff like that. And if more people are introduced, which I think there will be, it'll be so interesting to see what happens going forward.
Before we move on, actually, I just wanted to also mention a couple of things. That one, like you're saying, on the effects, the Demogorgon is completely physical. Mm-hmm. There's a completely physical effects. There are no computer generated effects.
Really?
So it was completely done to bring a sense of total realism to the scene. They use lighting and actual viscous, disgusting materials and all that kind of stuff to do that, which is brilliant. But the other really awesome thing about Stranger Things is as it developed, what happens to the fans, right? Cause a really wonderful thing was memorial for Bob after Bob goes missing. People respond, right? And there's a mural somewhere with a memorial for Bob and she's got a big mural and like, why are we forgetting her? You don't just forget her. This is a terrible thing that happened. And then, just that. And then the other thing was, if you guys can, please Google Merry Christmas, Will Byers, because it's a Charlie Brown skit.
Oh,
and
the little
known fact is that, The kid who plays Will also voices Charlie Brown in the Charlie Brown movie. And all the kids play their parts and it's so brilliant. I mean, if you love Charlie Brown, it was absolutely massive. And if that was more the Charlie Brown movie plot than the one they actually made, I would have been a bit happier. But it was perfect. Everybody was playing a character out of Peanuts, and it was absolutely cool. So those were the other two really cool bits to come out of this. I think the viewer interaction with what's going on was just marvelous. It was just so cool.
Fantastic way to really ship that bit off. I think I just want to say how much this TV show captured the imagination. We talked about it, the font of the actual Stranger Things, very, very Stephen King-like, and they did that on purpose. That's gone on now. It's massive. There's loads of t-shirts being made with that font and other things. It's kind of brought that font to the fore, really. This show has the music that we talked about earlier, that Kay did, fantastic. The whole thing of this show, the feel just comes to the fore. If you've really enjoyed what we've talked about, and it hasn't spoiled, well, it would have spoiled the whole fucking thing, but I would really recommend you go watch it. I'm going to watch it again, actually, over Christmas if I can. And maybe because it's such a good thing to go back and watch, isn't it? But before we finish, we've got a couple of things left. Is there any negatives from the plot that you thought, or anything they could have done better, Joey?
I wouldn't say negative. The one thing that I wish would have been more were the episodes. There was 8. I thought 10 to 12, maybe 10 would have been sufficient. But I think they said
they did it because they wanted it to feel speedy. They wanted the story to be. I also felt this, and I read up about it. And I think the anybody that does 8 shows over the 10 to 12 or the 13 is because they want to fit more in. It's why you're going to find Game of Thrones is going down to 8.
Yes.
Because they want it to be so fast paced that every episode you watch is the best, feels like the best ever.
Well, that, and then people won't complain that it's, you know, two fucking years in between the seasons.
of course. And imagine when those 8 happen, you're just blown away. And I think what they wanted
something
was
something they'll leave you with.
They wanted Stranger Things to capture immediately. You know, they wanted it to grab you. They didn't want it to be something that people fell out of love with in 4 episodes and then had to come back and watch 8. Westworld, for example, took 4 to get going. And I know a lot of people that switched off at 3. I did too. I only came back to Westworld. We'll cover it on a pod. Because I only came back because I started seeing the response on Twitter. And when I came back to it, it blew me away. The last six, seven episodes absolutely blew me away. But that's what I'm trying to say. I think the people who made it wanted to get you into it, keep you sucked in, and just binge the fucking 8.
which
I think you're dead on. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
So, okay. So, anyway, that was a negative. Kay, any negatives?
Not really. I would have liked them to handle the death of 11 a bit, with the disappearance of 11 a bit, like a bit better. She sort of, at the end, I was really invested in 11.
I think that's the point. She was great,
you know, and she, I just wanted her to win, and she was developing, and I loved how the actress, how when she, you know, like when she snapped people's necks, that character was real. She just changed. She was angry, you know. She just did it without a thought. I was superb, you know, so good. And then the scene with the supermarket, you know, those are all real things. We felt that. You can feel the frustration she has. And so, you know, she comes into this world. She saves everybody's life. She's the real like, sort of hero. This, as Jerry says, the sorceress of everything, the one with the true sense of power. Everybody else is sort of getting into a position so she can use that power in the most opportune time. And then she disappears and everybody, you know, the farewell she gets is that people talking about her wonderfully, which is great. But there seems to be, it's just almost like E.T. It's almost like E.T. E.T. came for a little while. He was a little supernatural being, and now he's gone home. But here, there's no sense of going home for me. I was really upset that she disappeared. But everybody else was like, oh, she's just gone somewhere else. But she just did this stuff, and she helped the Demogorgon. And, well, you won't remember her, but let's tell you good stories about, you know, like, be sad a little bit. I just want them to be a little bit sad about what happened, not be able to talk about it immediately.
I think they handled it well because they wanted to keep the unknown and you come back for season two type of thing. I like to leave things on a bit of a what happened? What? Where? What? Who? You know, so sure. I think that's what.
But I think they could have done that and mourned her. I think that might have been a bit more you foreshadowing.
You're just being depressing now. You just wanted them to have like a funeral for her.
I wanted to have a moment. She was so important. And it's like, yeah, no, let's tell you fun stories.
They sort of did that in the last episode. Remember when they cut to D&D, they kind of show Mike still has her tent up in his basement.
True.
Like, so, you know what I mean? Like, he's still, you could see it. Yeah.
But all that says that she's like, she's, I mean, that might be a bit of not dealing with the actual grief because she's, according to him, like, she's coming back basically. That's the thing though, but she's gone. Like, to all actual intents and purposes, she's dead. Yeah.
I hear what you're saying.
Like that kind of thing. And I think that might be, you know, if we did that and then she came back in the second season, I would have been like, yeah! Now I'm just expecting it.
No. I mean, if they mourned her, I'd just be like, she's come back from the dead. This is Superman stuff. I don't want this.
No. You think when a hero dies and comes back, the first person you think of is Superman, not Jesus.
No. Well, so, Jesus is a religious. I'm atheist, man. I'm going to go see
Jesus. Jesus.
I'm going comics, man. Joey's on the show.
That was cool.
I know what you meant.
The next movie is going to come back, right? He's dead. He's coming back. They're ruining it. Right.
Anyway. Now you're going to have somebody who yells at you for calling you, for you saying you're an atheist, Gags.
I know.
You know that's going to happen.
No, they won't. They don't. They'll respect my views. I respect theirs. If you believe in God, all good to you. You know, I hope it helps you in your life. Anyway, let's move away from that. The final thing of this show is a bit of fun. We can totally delete this if it doesn't go well, guys. is a quiz, and it's going to be the first to answer. There's no taking K off, bringing K back. It's going to be all the right. First to answer. So it's all about Stranger Things. We're going to finish the show off with a fun quiz. I think we've covered the show really, really well. I hope you enjoyed it. But here we go. There's 15 questions, okay? Someone's going to need to keep. You need to keep the tally, boys, because I'm going to be busy doing this. So, how many you get right, keep a tally. Okay. So, first question: when Eleven goes to the diner in search of food, she meets the owner. What is his name? Three options: Benny, Bonnie. Oh, there you go. So, first, yep. You know, he doesn't even let me answer the question.
He doesn't let you. I was being polite. You can. I should get a point for being polite.
Okay, you can.
Should be a point for being quiet.
Right. Okay. Here we go. In a flashback, Joyce goes to Will's hideout. What movie tickets did she buy for him?
Poltergeist.
I think that's one each. You both said same time.
Fair enough.
You both
fair
get
enough.
That one. You both said it same time. Absolutely no problem. Okay. Number three. Dr. Brenner asks Eleven to harm which kind of animal? A bird, a rabbit, a cat?
Cat.
Rabbit?
It's a cat. So that's three for Joey, one for Kay, yeah? So far. Okay. So what is the name of the boys' biology teacher? Mr. Kenny, Mr. Wheeler, Mr. Clark?
Mr. Clark.
Bang. Bang, bang, 3-2. Yeah, yeah. Here we go. This is good.
Really? Wow, what a guess. Awesome.
Right. So which school event did Mike ask 11 to? The fall dance, the spring fling, or the snowball?
Snowball.
Okay, 4-2. He's got that. Okay. To prove he's alive, how did 11 make contact with Will? The phone, the lights, the walkie-talkie?
Walkie-talkie.
You both said it. I'm going to give you 5-3. Right, okay. In a bike race home, Will wins which of Dustin's comics?
X-Men.
We talked about that. We're not having this question because we talked.
We did talk about that, yeah.
Pre-pod. Okay, 7's out. So it's still 5-3. Okay. At school, where does Steve tell Nancy to meet him? The library, the bathroom, the gym?
Bathroom.
Gym.
It's the bathroom. 6-3. Ah. Okay. When Joyce asks Will where he is, how does he respond? The walls, outside, or right here?
Right here.
Oh my God, 7-3. He's not giving you a chance.
He's like the internet.
How many pounds of salt did the group need to build the sensory deprivation tank? 1,000, 1,300, or 1,500?
1,300.
It's 1,500. I got that one right when I did it, by the way.
That's a hard one.
I know. What time did Mike tell 11 to meet him after school? 3:05, 3:15, 3:10?
3:15.
3:05.
It's 3:15. 7-4. Okay. How many tries did it take for Nancy to shoot the can? 2, 3, or 1?
1.
That's 8. That was 1. 8-4, is it? 8-4. Yeah, 8-4. It's pretty much done now. Where did the police claim to find Will's body? The lab, the lake, or the woods?
Lake.
Oh my God, fucking hell, Joey. 9-4. So quick.
I said it at the same time. No,
he did come first on that one. When it's together, I do say it. Where did Chief Hopper find the bug in his house? Under a desk, the TV, or the lights?
Lights.
Joey, 10-4. It's just a second ahead. Right. What is the name?
I think there's a delay because I'm in South Africa and I have worse telephone communication than everybody else. Okay. This is
I think I smell something. I think it's bullshit.
What is the name of Chief Hopper's daughter? Emily, Anna, or Sarah?
Sarah.
Emily.
It's Sarah. It's 11-4. So basically, to be honest, Kay, you got quite a lot right as well because but the difference was Joey was just faster. So there's absolutely no shame in 11-4. You actually probably got about nine of those, but he was just quicker to the punch than you. But that is out of 15.
Cheating into account, then I won.
Out of 14, in 11.
I'm just missing, Joey. I'm just missing.
Out of 14, you got 11, dude. That is pretty damn impressive, Joey. And with that, I am going to say a massive thank you to Joey and Kay for coming on my first host episode of On the Box. I hope you both enjoyed that.
Awesome time, man.
Great. And I hope that you felt like you covered everything that you needed to. If there's anything that you missed, say it now or forever hold your peace.
Discuss it. If we missed anything, hit us up on Twitter.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, please do.
I think we covered a lot of everything on the show that we wanted to say. Any plugs, Joey?
Any articles I write for AI Comic Pod, I'd love people read them. Some people are into it. Some people are not. Tell me what you think. I haven't got much feedback. I know there's not a ton of people who read them, but it's all good. I enjoy doing it. And anything on AI, I mean, there's something, there really is. It's not just somebody saying that. There really is something for everybody. Mm-hmm. Even if you hate soccer, there's a whole nother geek side you can listen to.
And I'm really trying to push that, hopefully getting the comic articles onto Google News if we can. We'll see. We're trying to do that if we can do it. I'm working on it. And if that happens, you'll find a different audience, Mr. Connors.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully
that will be
very good for you and the site as well. Kay, any plugs? You've done a lot of work this week and maybe doing some coming up as well.
Yeah, we're recording in a couple of days' time. The a iPod Final One of 2016 for me.
Lovely.
And yeah, which will be really cool. But yeah, do go check. I also do the Face Off Pod every week. And if you haven't heard the Everton one, do it, because we were a bit giddy. Nobody was drinking, but we may as well have. It was so much fun to do that pod.
It was so much fun because the Everton fan didn't turn up and totally fucking wussed out.
And we just took full advantage. So yeah, do have a look at that. But yeah, that's it for me.
Okay. Please do check out AI Audible from my side. It's a new project that we're working on with Trevor Downey. A massive welcome back to Trev to the site. And obviously, this is his baby. He's going to be taking the reins on. We're just going through the baby steps, really, of getting everything set up in the background. A lot of work being done. If you go and listen to the introduction podcast, that's out. And also his first article, which was on Andy Rails' article about Adam Lallana, the Renaissance man. You can go and see the type of feel we're going to get from AI Audible and you know, basically us talking. Well, not us talking, Trevor narrating the shows as a mini podcast. And these article pods, they're only going to be 5-6 minutes long, maybe max 10 if it's a longer, you know, a 2,000 worder. So yeah, maybe, you know, go and check those out. Those are going to be a big thing on the Liverpool side of things. So it's brand new, something we're going to kick off very soon. As always, AI trying to push the envelope, really push into different forms, different mediums, and make everything available, especially the writing. We wanted the writers to have more out there, their work getting appreciated a little bit more. And I thought this is a brilliant way of doing it. But apart from that, there might be another on the box before the end of the year. I might just do the next two I want to do are The Night Of or Westworld. So yeah, we'll have a think about what I'm going to do. But I really, really hope you enjoyed this. This is the type of stuff we're going to do. We're going to move on. We're going to have a bit of fun while we're doing On The Box as well. That's what it's about. TV is supposed to be fun, not serious. So I'm going to be really fun with it and get people on that are really passionate about what they're watching, because I certainly am. And yeah, thank you very much for listening and supporting. We'll be back very soon on The Box.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.